principal purpose of our voyage was not simply to gather the flora and fauna. That was my personal preoccupation. Rather, our mission was to explore and chart uncharted waters. To that end, the crew of the Beagle would drop a weighted line to the bottom and record the depth at regular intervals. The measurements were called soundings. They told us where we had been and would serve to guide those who followed.
From the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, listen now to our program called Soundings. Thoughts and ideas about the present and the future with an appreciation for the past. Your host is Wayne Pond.
Professor Mihailo Mihailov was a political prisoner in Yugoslavia, charged by the Tito regime with writing hostile propaganda. After his release from prison in 1978, Professor Mihailov lectured and taught at universities in the United States, Europe, and Asia. Professor Mihailov is the author of several books, including Moscow Summer, Russian Themes, Underground Notes, and Unscientific Thoughts. As a scholar in residence at the National Humanities Center, Professor Mihailov is completing a memoir of his political experiences in Yugoslavia between 1965 and 1978. Professor Mihailov serves as chairman of the board of Democracy International, a nonprofit institution which supports political pluralism. Joining in the conversation is John Agresto, a member of the staff at the center. Professor Mihailov, it's a pleasure to have you on Soundings at the National Humanities Center. Tell us about your experiences as a dissident. How did you get in trouble with the government of Yugoslavia?
In 1964, in summer of 1964, I spent about 5 weeks in Moscow State University. This was a culture exchange program between Yugoslavia and Soviet Union. And when I came back, I wrote a series of articles. Later, the series was printed as a book titled Moscow Summer. And in beginning of 1965, Yugoslav literature magazine Delo started to print this my series of articles.
Well, what did you say specifically that got you in trouble? Did you libel somebody, or did you talk about policy, government, what?
No, this book testified about first step of what we know now as dissidents movement in Soviet Union, intellectual and psychic developments in Soviet intelligentsia and writers and artist circles. And one of the reasons why Soviet Union protested and the Yugoslav government arrested me after President Tito attacked me in a public speech was because between my visiting in USSR in summer 64 and between when my article started to be printed in Yugoslav magazine, leader of Soviet Union Khrushchev lost his position, and new leaders immediately tried to change political line.
What specifically did you say that got you in trouble? You said that President Tito attacked you in a speech.
He attacked me first time when he attacked me. He attacked me many times in the next 13 years. But for the Moscow summer, he attacked me just for this reason that I only mentioned in two or three sentences in Moscow summer that first concentration camps or even death camps was founded by Lenin in 1918, and because Yugoslav dictatorship monopoly of Communist Party in Yugoslavia is also based on this meet of October Revolution and Lenin leadership, this is, of course, dangerous also for Yugoslavia.
Well, what happened to you after Tito gave this speech? You spent a total of 6 or 7 years in prison, I understand.
I spent about 7 years in prison, but not for this book. I spent only 40 days in investigation prison for Moscow summer, but I lost my university position. I couldn't print anything more in Yugoslav newspapers and magazine. But after that, I tried to found independent socialist magazine, and for this I got 3.5 years of prison terms. And in 1974 I was arrested, and in 1975 I got again, but the second time, 7 years sentence for 4 articles in New York Times and New York Review books.
Why didn't you try to get out of the country if or were you aware that you were in danger of being thrown into jail?
First of all, until March 4th, 1965, I wrote so many in Yugoslav magazines and newspapers, and I got only excellent critics, so that nobody expected, even me, that I will be in trouble. I was arrested the same day when Yugoslav newspaper printed Tito, President Tito attacks again me. And I didn't read this his speech. I came about noon in university. I bought newspaper, but I didn't read. And I saw that people's colleagues and students looked on me very strange. And I even thought that something is wrong with my face. I came in men's room to see what is. But it happened only that they already read my Tito's speech. And immediately when I came in my office, after 5 minutes, I was arrested.
I'm curious if this was happening to other people at the same time. This kind of thing apparently doesn't happen in a vacuum.
All dissidents that I know them in Yugoslavia all had very similar development in what we can say, dissident's way of life. Even Gilas, first dissident in the Eastern world and father of dissident's movement, he also didn't expect that he will lose his position and so on. He was second person in party and government in 1953, president of parliament, and he wrote his articles for 3 months, every week appeared one his article in party newspaper Borba is struggle. And in January 1954, it was really surprised for Gilas, for everybody. Tito started with the meeting of Politburo. Gilas lost his position, his power, and so on. And all dissidents, including me, always were in similar situation. Nobody expected, for the first of all, nobody knew that this will be happened. I wrote about Soviet Union almost in same way for 5 years before I was arrested for Moscow summer. So that all depend of in which way will be changed internal and foreign policy in such one party countries. And because you don't know in which way tomorrow will be changed, you can be arrested for something that day before you got prize.
Professor Mikhailov, you have lived under an oppressive authoritarian or totalitarian regime. There is a distinction, I understand. And you've also lived in an open society in America. You've been here almost 3 years. What's your view of the contrast between the two kinds of life?
First of all, Yugoslavia is something in between totalitarian and authoritarian system. And the most important difference between authoritarian and totalitarian system is in so-called active or passive unfreedom. For example, in authoritarian system, you cannot do many things. Many things is prohibited and so on. But nobody asks you to do something that you don't want to do. In totalitarian systems, is just totalitarian systems are based on active unfreedom. If you will not go and if you will not go and if you will not claim to long live president, long live communist party, you will lose your job and perhaps you will come in prison. Nobody asks you in authoritarian country to do this. You cannot perhaps talk against president or leader, but nobody asks you to applaud him. This is different between active and passive unfreedom.
Well, by contrast with an authoritarian regime, then, what are your impressions of how you've lived in America?
It is really different world, absolutely different world, and I can only, I feel myself in one way as I had already experienced when I was released a few times from prison. In one way you are happy, and in the other way you start to care about things that you never had to care when you was in prison.
For instance,
when you are in prison, you don't care about food because somebody will give you food. You will not care about dress. Somebody will give you dress, even medical insurance. And when you are out of prison, then you can go left and right where do you want to go to talk with whom do you want. But in the same time, you have immediately to start to care about everything other. Of course, it is not any relationship between freedom and unfreedom. It is not it is impossible to make any comparison, because even people who lived in very bad conditions in freedom, if they are in prison, they wants to be free again. But for people who never had this experience, how is this to lose freedom, sometimes it's difficult to understand what this means to lose freedom, because freedom is something as air. You cannot, you don't think that air is important before you lose it.
Professor Mikhailov, what's your view of the question of human rights? The Carter administration emphasized it, and it appears that the Reagan administration is moving away from it as a as an emphatic political element.
I think that the problem of defense of human rights in all the world is most important what Carter started. And I really can agree with one Soviet important dissident who said that in spite of all mistake and fault that Carter did in internal and foreign policy, just for his human rights policy, he will remain in history, especially in history of communist world. But unfortunately, Carter started in first few months very strong in this way. After that, he stopped, and only 1 year later, after his nomination in Belgrade conference, he really absolutely lost battle for human rights. So that you can criticize Carter from both sides, from two points of view. First, of direction of his policy, and second, that he didn't follow what he proclaimed. And up to now, it is not really clear in which direction in this sphere, in defense of human rights, will go new administration.
From the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, you're listening to Soundings, putting ideas into circulation. Here again is your host, Wayne Pond.
Professor Mikhailo Mikhailov was a political prisoner in Yugoslavia under the Tito regime from 1966 to 1970 and again from 1974 to 1977. Professor Mikhailov's prison sentences stemmed from charges of hostile propaganda and from his efforts to establish an independent literary magazine. Professor Mikhailov was born in Yugoslavia of Russian immigrant parents in 1934. He was educated and taught at Zagreb University, where he specialized in Russian literature. He's the author of several books and numerous articles about Russian literature and about political dissent. Joining in the conversation for Soundings is John Agresto, a member of the staff at the center. The discussion resumes with Professor Mikhailov's comments about human rights, U.S. foreign policy, and totalitarian governments.
A fact is that peoples in communist countries had immediately gave this... they started to believe in democracy, especially in the United States, and they started to hope that someday development in communist country, not only in struggle in the World War, but just development will going in this direction of more democratic and pluralistic society, because everybody knew in communist country how all communist countries are dependent of technology, trade, grants, money from democratic countries, especially from United States, and it is always extremely important what United States and democratic world, for what they are struggling. And if it's human rights, this means that it is something that immediately gives strong hope and believing in democracy and so on in totalitarian country. And this is very important because in such systems, from superficial point of view, really, all what is going depend only on the leader or politburo and so on. But in general, if majority of people doesn't support something, some decision or something, so it is very difficult for any leadership, for any leader in such totalitarian country to lead country or system in this direction.
Professor Mikhailov, do you think anybody should preach to anybody else about human rights?
I don't think that it is question about statements. But statement is something that American government almost always did for last 200 years. But something new started in last 10 years. For example, when question of human rights or part of question of human rights get linked with order, with trade, with army support, with economic support, and so on. That means that declaration only a statement is nothing if it's not really, it does not exist strong link between all other instruments of foreign policy. For example, we know this so-called Jackson Amendment on about this trade agreement with Soviet Union, technology and so on, that really hoped to thousands and thousands Soviet Jews to emigrate from Soviet Union. It is only result of this amendment from 1972. And not only link, but all depend of what is the goal, what is direction of United States foreign policy. For example, United States foreign policy in all history had only three, and even now exist only, up to now, exist only three general line and general methods, general goal. First was something that exists until World War II, or in between two world wars. It is something as isolation of the United States. The United States doesn't want to be involved in foreign affairs, a little bit in South America with Monroe Doctrine and so on, but in general, foreign policy of the United States' goal was not to be involved in European, Asian, so on policy. Second was active foreign policy. That means when the United States has goal to win in the war. This was in World War I, World War II. And third, that it is now, from World War II up to now, is to keep status quo, to be involved in foreign policy in all the world, but not active, but only to keep status quo, to try to keep it, and this is passive policy. And it is impossible, of course, until the United States has such a goal to keep status quo. Human rights, defense of human rights, will never be successful, because majority, many of countries in the world, and especially enemy of the United States, are not democratic countries. And if you want to keep status quo, so you have to forget about human rights. And only if you want to, in active way, if you want to win in a world situation, then that question of human rights will become most important and one of the premier first goal of United States policy. Up to now, it is not such situation, and perhaps never will come. But perhaps it will be repeated something like New Pearl Harbor, and United States will have to struggle for not only to keep status quo, but to struggle for to be winner in the world, and then human rights will be most important.
Professor Mihailov, I'm going to ask you a terribly unfair question. Supposing you're sitting at home one day, and the phone rings, and it's the President of the United States, and he says, "Mr. Mihailov, you've been on all parts of the world. You're noted." Dissident, noted figure in world affairs. I want one piece of advice from you. Just tell me one thing that I should know or do. What would you tell him?
I would tell only that the most, really most important for future and for development in our world is to put in the first goal just defense of human rights. But I'm a realist, because I know that nobody before you are in situations that you have to swim, when you can to lose your head, then you start to swim, but nobody start to struggle on to swim or to build anything before is such situations that push you in this. Even United States didn't go in World War II before Pearl Harbor, so that it is only theoretical question for human rights. But I really believe that it is something that in future will be much more reverse, much more strong than Carter, because Carter only started this, and after a few months he stopped.
Professor Mihailov, as we said, you've been in the United States for 3 years. What's the best thing you've, what do you like most about the United States, and what do you like least about the United States? If you had to single out two things, at two extremes.
Now I already, after almost 3 years, I already feel this as absolutely normal, that you can talk what do you want, that you can travel, nobody to ask. Then even in motel, nobody checked your ID and took your number of your ID and so on. So that, but this is really fascinated me first year when I was here, this incredible freedom. But now I can understand American that they doesn't value too much, because you accustom so quickly on such situation. And what I personally, I have not this experience, but I had many times that I got such impression that like in all other Western country exists, but not in the United States, something as medical insurance for everybody.
You think that's something? You think that that's something that's necessary? That's where you would improve.
I believe, because I met so many people that are scared, that are afraid that something will happen, and they have no insurance and so on. And such situation doesn't exist in Western Germany, in England, Sweden, and no one development country, even in Canada. So that I think that it is for such strong, rich country as the United States, it is a possibility to make something as a medical insurance for everybody.
Professor Mihailov, if you were to look ahead, let's say in the next 10 or 20 years, what do you see as the future of Western democracies?
After I became more familiar with Western democracy, I knew only theoretical from movies and books and so on. I'm just in opposite situation of many other peoples here, because I start to believe that Western democracy is much more stronger than that peoples realize this. In general, if you will compare 1940-1941, Western democracy was in so terrible situation that nobody believed that it will survive. On one side you had aggressive totalitarian Nazi Hitler won in France, and he kept almost all Europe. On the other side it was Stalin and so on. But democracy in England, United States and so on, democracy survived and become even much more stronger now than before. And I really believe that freedom is much more stronger than any other systems. For example, many people now think that freedom and democracy had to be limited because it is a question of how to survive for democracy. But I really believe that any limitation of freedom only can help just unfreedom or totalitarians. I do not see any really dangerous in United States, any dangerous development, except something that I cannot understand and I cannot express from you. For me personally, it is a crime. It is a little bit very strange for me to understand. I never had personal experience. I worked in New York for many months absolutely alone in subway, and even in Harlem I never met anything, something so. But as you can read from newspaper, crime exists. And this is that I cannot understand.
Professor Mihailov, it's a pleasure to have you at the center. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Wayne.
You've been listening to Soundings, putting ideas into circulation, in conversations originating from the National Humanities Center. Your host was Wayne Pond. We're interested in your comments. Write to us at the National Humanities Center, Post Office Box 12256, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina 27709. Director of the Center is William Bennett. Soundings is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities and distributed by the Public Affairs Broadcast Group, Los Angeles, California.
This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, inviting you to join me for Soundings, the center's radio program. This week, my guest is Mihailo Mihailov, the Yugoslav writer who was imprisoned for 7 years as a political dissident under the Tito regime. Politics and Society, the topics this week on Soundings.